PM Tampa Bay, I'm Ryan Gorman. With me this evening, Felix Vega and James Berlander on the board. Morgan Lash will join us in just a bit. So some new police body cam footage was leaked the other day in the George Floyd case. And what really caught my attention were some of the narratives that people were trying to push after that video was leaked. I watched it. Felix, you watched it. And just to give you a sense as to what some people were saying, some of the takeaways from that video, sports journalist Jason Whitlock, what he said about this body cam footage really stood out to me. He argued that no rational person can watch it and conclude that Floyd was killed over his race. He also said it showed the behavior of the police officers seemed appropriate and restrained given Floyd's level of resistance and bizarre conduct. And he added that it will be virtually impossible to convict the three other officers present of any crime and equally difficult to convict Officer Chauvin of murder. And he wasn't the only one who had that kind of a take. There were a lot of other people, mainly on the right, who were saying this video, it really changed the game in terms of their opinion of the whole thing. And they've been calling on people in the media, athletes, celebrities, politicians to kind of walk back some of their takes on the death of George Floyd. I didn't get that at all from the video. What I got from the video was someone in George Floyd who he was certainly acting bizarrely, but he also didn't seem to understand what it is that they wanted from him. And he was fearful of the police, too. Just he kept saying, you know, don't shoot me, this and that. And he was quite a bit hysterical later on in the video, no question about it. I would say he offered some resistance, not, you know, anything extraordinary. But there was some resistance. He was very excited over the whole situation. And what I took away was there wasn't much on the part of the cops in terms of trying to calm things down. The escalation went very quickly and then eventually spiraled out of control. As a former state prosecutor, let's go to you, Felix, on, you know, what you saw in this new body cam footage and then also this idea that it helps the officers who were involved.
Well, first off, from a purely evidentiary standpoint in looking at the way that the officers acted, for the situation to escalate from there's a call, George Floyd passing allegedly a $20 bill that was counterfeit at this convenience store, to approaching the vehicle with guns drawn. Let's start there.
Yeah, and I think that's a key point. You've got to remember what this was all about. This wasn't a call that somebody had committed armed robbery or assault or some kind of violent crime. We're talking about potentially a counterfeit $20 bill.
Right. And to make a comparison, Michael Brown in Ferguson, that police-involved shooting, that started over a robbery call and an assault in the convenience store where Michael Brown put the store clerk in a chokehold as he was trying to steal those cigarettes. So that's a good comparison where you have allegations of something happening at a convenience store and someone ending up dead in police custody.
And recently there was another prosecutor, right, that declined to bring charges against the officer in the Michael Brown case.
Right. It was the state prosecutors in St. Louis, which I didn't even know they were still investigating the case because it happened in 2015, I think. And the officer involved in the case was cleared by the Justice Department of any wrongdoing, and they wrote a 50...
By the Obama Justice Department.
Right, and it was a scathing, basically, review of not only the fact that witnesses lied, the narrative of the hands-up, don't shoot, was predicated on a lie about what happened with Michael Brown, and it was, to me, it was very revealing as to how far the narrative went in one direction, where the evidence from the beginning was clear that from the autopsy report that was released by Brown's family that he was charging at the officer when he was shot and killed. So that's some context for what we're dealing with in this particular case. Now, the initial call, like I said, counterfeit $20 bill, You have the initial encounter where the officers walk up to the SUV that he's in with their guns already drawn. And this is on the body camera video. Yes, you hear George Floyd give a series of, you know, reasons why he didn't want to be handcuffed and put into custody. But the fact that he kept saying, "Don't shoot me, don't shoot me, don't shoot me," was very telling to me. And also the fact that he said that he couldn't, I heard this narrative. Well, he was claiming the whole fake "I can't breathe" thing, just like the gentleman in New York that ended up getting killed. He also pointed out that he had recently had the coronavirus. So that was another consideration that I'm taking in. And these are all things I'm not going to weigh in on what a sports commentator is saying or someone that's a political person is trying to change the narrative of this. I'm looking at this, if I'm a prosecutor and I'm a juror, you know, how is a jury going to look at this video independent of what happened to George Floyd? Again, you got to look at this like it's a big movie. So you now have the initial encounter on body camera video, moving to the struggle and what happened with George Floyd trying to put him in the car, then moving him to the ground, sitting him down outside the convenience store, and then having him face down on the ground with the officer's knee in his neck. You've got to look at the whole continuum. The defense wants to edit out certain parts of this. They would rather not pay attention to what happened to George Floyd, Officer Chauvin, and the other officers at the end of the movie. They want to focus on the beginning of the movie.
There never really seemed to be any kind of discussion. The police involved never seemed interested in hearing what he had to say. It was very quick. You know, they're up at his vehicle. The gun is drawn very quick. You could see it in the body cam footage. They're putting the handcuffs on him. They're putting him in the back of the... There never seemed to be any attempt to talk to him, really.
Right.
You know, maybe you could say they don't need to, but that would seem to be a good de-escalation tactic in order to get things. They wanted to rush the process, it seemed like. Like, hurry up, just put your hands behind your back, let us cuff you, let us get you in the car. They never really seemed to take into consideration what he might be thinking as he's approached out of nowhere, because clearly he didn't expect cops to show up with guns drawn. And then even some of the people who were bystanders, I think the passenger, they were even taken aback because they were told, you know, go up against the wall and this and that. And it escalated really quickly.
Right. And that's, I think, the key takeaway in this, in terms of, and because with everything that's going on, there was the movement that was created by George Floyd's death and the calls for police reform and the ongoing debate over the protests. I've been sitting here all day and watching one network. They're obsessed with Portland and what's going on in Portland and the protests and the riots and the defunding, you know, of the police. If you're a prosecutor in this situation, you have one focus. It's on your case and on the murder case that you have brought against the four officers. This broader narrative that's now spun up out of this is that, oh, the video is, you know, absolutely going to acquit these officers. That's all well and good. You can have your opinions all you want. But I think when you look at the video and you look at what the continuum of what happened, that's what prosecutors got to focus on and keep the eye on the ball on what the jury is going to consider when this case and if this case does go to trial.
Now, how come this video? Now, this video was leaked. It wasn't released. But why wasn't all of this put out in the beginning so we could see the full context of all of it?
That I don't know, because I know what the reporting I saw is that the media had access to see the video and some media outlets did, but they were not allowed to. You couldn't share it with anyone. So, for example, this happens a lot in, you know, death investigations where you can go view the autopsy photos. You can go view graphic crime scene video. You can report on it saying, well, this is what the crime scene photos show, but you can't show the actual video or the photos themselves. So I think this was a narrative that got lost from whatever reporters had seen it already and, you know, did not really either didn't think it was a big deal or really didn't give it the context that it needed. Now that it's been leaked, it creates a different perspective of what the incident, looking at the full episode that you see.
And real quick, I should point out, if anybody was concerned about the defunding of police here in the Tampa Bay area, Mayor Castor released her city budget proposal, and she has no plans to cut the police budget. Her quote was, "We will focus on investing, not divesting." So There will be no defunding of the police here in Tampa. Let me go to the phones real quick. 800-969-9352 is the number. Chris in Sarasota joins the show. Chris, thanks for the call.
Hey, no problem. Appreciate listening to you guys. Something to piggyback off of what you were just talking about in regards to the narrative and delaying the video. The longer that you delay the video, it helps to feed the narrative that there's a reason why they wanted to hold it, because it might not match up with what's being told out in the media, similar to what you were talking about with Michael Brown. We were told one thing, but then as evidence comes out, you realize that that's not exactly what happened. But I was originally calling just from the standpoint, and I feel like I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is, you know, with what the video shows, you also have the sense of what are the charges and can you prove the charges? And do you feel like Keith Ellison and the prosecutors have overcharged in this case when you start to hear other aspects of, you know, I can't breathe when he was sitting down as the police officers at the beginning tried to be accommodating? It might cut against the narrative, and with some of the more intentional charges that are being filed against them, they might not be able to prove that level of charge.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. I do believe in terms of Officer Chauvin, who was the main culprit in terms of the kneeling on the neck and that particular instance, that was properly charged based on the way that Minnesota law is written, because what it shows is that it was an assault that led to the death of someone else. Remember, this is a felony murder charge, not a premeditated murder charge like we've seen in some of the other instances, but it's a fair point. And as far as the other officers, their defense is going to be, as we've already discussed, were they complicit in what Officer Chauvin did? Were they actively involved in it? They're going to argue that they were listening to a superior officer. We've heard the body cam statements that they made expressing concern for George Floyd, where Officer Chauvin rejects those concerns. So all of this is going to be played out in different motions. Each defense attorney for each of the officers, they're going to have their own way of saying,
yeah,
my officer is not as culpable as the others, and this is why. Those are going to be come out in motions to dismiss, and also, you know, in negotiations with prosecutors, whether or not they just, you know, you have everything on video, but if you have perspective from the context of the other officers, that may be valuable to the prosecution against Officer Chauvin.
I just feel like after seeing this new video, this newly leaked video, nothing in my mind really changes when it comes to the facts of this case. I'm seeing some people make it like this video is some new revelation that completely upends the entire narrative and all of that. And I don't know what video they watch, but I certainly didn't see that. And then also, like we've talked about before, the key part of this case, you talk about a movie and you've got to go through the whole thing, but once he's on the ground, it's that moment, those 8 minutes from there,
right,
that will really weigh heaviest on the case, correct?
Yeah, that's true. And that's another thing that we saw with the opposite happened in the George Zimmerman case, where that was a second degree murder case, where the moments leading up to when Trayvon Martin was killed were equally as important, because it started with the phone call to 911 by George Zimmerman saying that, hey, I've got a suspicious African-American teenager in my neighborhood. I'm following him. The dispatcher says, you don't need to do that. We'll send a car out to respond to this. What does he do? He follows him, and that becomes part of the entire movie, if you will, leading up to Trayvon Martin's death.
Let me get to Chuck and Sefner here. Chuck, you got to be real quick. What's your point?
Just a quick one. Now that the video's come out, do you guys not agree that the fact that this guy was resisting arrest and he didn't have a clean slate to begin with, that these officers probably knew who he was? And then the area also, you have to take and consider that it, where this went down at, do you think that that might have had a little something to play with it?
I don't think his history is going to play into this. And you know, in terms of him resisting arrest in the early part of the altercation with the officers, the fact is, once he's on the ground, you know, and you put the knee on the neck and you keep it there that long, you know, with so many people saying, hey, like, he's not moving, he's not breathing, I just don't see this as a game changer.
Right. And in terms of making that argument, what the jury is going to be told is that you need to weigh what the officers did ultimately versus the level of resistance that he was, you know, putting up with. And the fact that, and you've got the tapes of not, this didn't happen just in those 8 minutes where he is is on the ground dying. This went on for much longer. And so the level of resistance is going to be balanced against what the officer's actions were, again, when this is considered by a jury.
The level of resistance matters. This was not Rashard Brooks in Atlanta who actively he attacked the cops.
Exactly.
This was a different kind of resistance, and that will matter in the case, right?
Yeah, because this was a low-level investigation. Why did you need four cops to investigate this and come up on him where he was parked at a distance from the convenience store? And you see all this on the body camera video and also the surveillance video from outside the store, all things that are going to play into how this is considered by a jury.